This week on the Vergecast, you know what it is. It's the iPhone event. The iPhone 11, the iPhone 11 Pro, the iPhone Pro Max, new iPads, Apple Watches, some service talks, and we got to do some Pixel Leaks. That's Vergecast coming up now.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow. To get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at Deloitte.com/US/engineering advantage.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Hello, and welcome to the Vergecast, the flagship podcast of the 5G revolution. Where's that 5G race money?
Wow.
Bring it to me. I am Neil. I'm your friend. Dieter Bohn is here.
I am right here.
Okay.
Yes. I'm going to be crabby in this podcast. It's going to be fun.
Okay. That's exciting. Paul Miller is here.
Hello.
How's it going?
I promise to bring a sense of optimism to the show.
That's good. I like it.
I can explain my crabby thing. I'm publicly now saying that I've dropped the vape, just like Ashley Carmen's excellent story pointed out to everybody that people are dropping vapes. I have done that as well, which means my nicotine content has dropped, which means my weight has gone up, and so has my relative level of, like, ambient anger. So, enjoy.
There is real tech news this week. The good stuff. Tech season is here. There was an Apple event, y'all. Dieter and I went to the Circle. Mm. We were in it. It was big. There's like, a lot of people there. Two Pro phones, as we expected, an iPhone 11, a new Apple Watch, a surprise iPad. There's just a lot going on. Yeah. Some service announcements. Where do you want to start, Dieter?
Honestly, we just got to start with the iPhones. Like, that's it. There's a bunch of other stuff. We want to get into it. We could, like, tease the listeners by saying we're going to get to the big stuff later. But you just want to know about the big iPhones right now. So we're just going to tell you.
So we were there. Dieter and I were there. It was, I would say the event was muted. It's funny how people ask a lot about, like, what's the vibe?
Yeah.
I will tell you right now, the vibe at any tech event does not matter. Like, if you have a bunch of journalists and employees of your company together in a room and they're excited, it doesn't make the products good. If they're crabby, it doesn't make the products bad. Like, it just doesn't matter. But the vibe, I would say, I'll just say it, the vibe was kind of muted. What are they going to do? Uh-huh. Are they going to surprise us? Are they going to, like, make a move to, like, really jump the thing ahead? Is it going to be iterative? And everyone's kind of expecting these iterative updates to the phones. And that's more or less what they delivered.
Yeah, no one was, like, unreasonably like, oh my God, this is amazing. No one was saying, oh, I'm really disappointed. It was just like, yep, this is what we hoped you would do. You did it. Cool. Great. Let's go look at it. That was like, it was a chill, relaxed, you made the things vibe.
Yeah. And the keynote was, they moved it along really fast. They just, like, up and running. And they ended with Apple Retail, which I think is notable. We'll come back to that in an end.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Let's start with the phone. So, as we expected, they basically revved the 10R and the 10S and changed the names. So the 10R got revved into the iPhone 11, which I think is a meaningful name because now it is just the iPhone. That's the iPhone you should get. That's what we've been saying about the 10R. They added an ultra-wide camera. That's basically what they did.
They swapped the telephoto for the ultra-wide. Well, the R didn't have a tele. It had just the regular wide, so they added a second camera. But anyway, we'll come back to that.
Yeah, so they added the second camera. It's an ultra-wide. They revved the processor to the A13 Bionic. That's what they did. It's a new color. That's what they did. And they changed the design of the back a little bit, so it's a square. The camera bump is a square. Then they took the 10S and the 10S Max. They renamed them the iPhone 11 Pro and the iPhone 11 Pro Max. which I believe is the most unwieldy product name Apple has ever come out with. And those have a new OLED screen that gets a lot brighter. So that's the big one. The screen is also more power efficient. They added a third camera, so the XS already had the standard and the tele, and then they added the ultra wide to that one as well. And the back is matte. That's it. That's like more or less, it has a slightly faster LTE camera. So really the difference in these phones, same processor, same basic camera in the normal and the ultra wide. The Pro adds OLED display. It adds a matte finish back and it adds a telephoto camera.
Yeah.
And slightly faster LTE, which is just like an impossible thing to measure or test for most people. Like it either happens to you or it doesn't.
One other thing that the Pro adds, which I think is actually a little bit noteworthy, although I have mixed feelings about it, it adds a smaller size option. The default iPhone 11 is the exact same size as the iPhone XR, and it's big. The size is like large. And the iPhone 11 Pro is the same size as the iPhone XS and the iPhone X, which is just slightly smaller. It's still a big phone. I don't think that the standard 11 is so much bigger than the Pro that it's like going to drive you crazy. But I do guarantee you that there are people in the world who are probably going to spend the extra money to get the Pro because it's just a little bit smaller.
Yeah, I think that's right.
There's one other thing that I think is worth mentioning in terms of new stuff. And we should get into why, and that's battery life.
Yeah, so the 11 Pro and the 11 Pro Max, a big difference from the XS is that they no longer have 3D Touch, and they are slightly thicker and heavier. So I think they took out the 3D Touch stuff, they made the phones a little bit bigger, and they stuffed a much bigger battery in these phones. So the 11 Pro gets 4 hours of additional battery life. The 11 Pro Max gets 5 hours of additional battery life. That is compared to the 11, which has a more efficient processor, gets 1 hour of additional battery life.
Right.
So you don't get those huge jumps over the previous model just by refinements. They just shoved a bigger battery in there.
But this is exciting, and I don't know if it's important, but it's it feels important as a statement that we can finally make things thicker because we did a lot of work making thin. It's fun when it's thin, but it's not good if you're going to sacrifice on heat performance, or battery performance.
Yeah, and it's funny because I didn't even realize it was thicker or heavier until I was done at the event. I was like in the hotel room. I'm reading The Verge's coverage, and I see Chaim Gartenberg be like, "Hey, it's thicker and heavier because there's a bigger battery." And I was like, I was there. I was holding it. We made our videos. We did all the things. I carry a XS Max every day. I picked up the 11 Pro Max. Did not notice. Right, it is imperceptibly thicker and heavier, and you get 5 hours of additional battery life. Like, there's a lesson there, everybody.
Now do laptops.
Exactly. So those are the kind of the top line changes. We should dive into these cameras because that's really, I think, where all the action is. Dieter's making a face at me. Why don't you think so?
So, okay. All the action is in the cameras. And this was my like thing I wrote before the event. Like they gotta do something with the cameras. They at least have to get up to par with the current state of Android cameras, which is quality of the pixel, number of lenses of everybody else. Like do well with the cameras. And I think that is where like most of like the thing to pay attention to, most of the action. And for a lot of people, like most of the reason to upgrade is. But for me, even though there's not a whole lot else to say about it, because we've already said it, like to me the most important thing, the best upgrade here, assuming they did the work on the cameras, is that the small Pro got that extra 4 hours of battery life. But again, there's nothing else to say. Let's talk about the cameras.
Well, I mean, there's something there in the reframing of these devices, right?
Right.
That, you know, the iPhone X came out and they put out the iPhone 8 and they're like, the iPhone 10 is the future of the iPhone. All, you know, this is new gesture system, new screen, OLED, the whole thing. And, you know, a couple years later, the iPhone 11 mm-hmm. is not... It's not an OLED screen anymore. It's a 720p right. LCD. It looks fine. I think mm-hmm. a lot of people have 10Rs and think it looks just fine. The OLED screens on the Pros just look way better. And it's right. still like a 7. Oh, and they cut prices. This is notable.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
The iPhone 11 starts at $699, which
right. instead of $749.
Instead right. of $749. So that's a huge statement of this is going to be the mainstream phone. Right. It's in it. It's more inexpensive than before. It's competitive on price against flagships. It offers you a bunch of the features of the flagships. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to spend $1,000 for the best stuff Apple can give you, you can get the Pro phone.
Notably, that $699 price is like really competitive with that like just sub ultra premium tier of Android phones. Like, it's head to head with like the OnePlus 7 Pro, basically, right?
Yeah.
And that is interesting because I don't know how many people are actually comparison shopping like a high end Android phone and an iPhone, like, or especially an iPhone 11. But if someone was like, oh, I want an iPhone, but look at these fancy new Android phones, like, the iPhone 11 is a pretty bold statement of no, you don't need to go that way. You can spend your $700 and get an iPhone.
Yeah, with a 720p LCD.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a significant sort of like spec downgrade compared to the OnePlus stuff. But
right.
I think most people, at least in America, this is not true in other places, and we should talk about that too. But if you're locked in the iMessage walled garden, right, like one of Apple's jobs is to like make that garden like a very nice garden. Right, and to keep you from ever even thinking about leaving it, and now they've got a bunch of like price points inside the garden with competitive feature sets where you're like, you know, I could leave and like endure the switching costs of the green bubble and getting all my new apps and, I don't know, Google surveilling me relentlessly, whatever it is, whatever happens outside these walls, or I just like pay the $700 and like be happy. I think that's one of Apple's jobs now. I'm not saying that I love the walled garden. Yeah, I think everybody knows how I feel about the walled garden. But as the maintainers of the walled garden, I think, at least in the United States, Apple has to – it has to be competitive inside the walled garden. I think the 11 does that really well. I think you go to – and this I think a lot – this will segue right into the camera stuff. You go to like the Chinese market where iMessage has no hold and everyone's jumping around all the time. There's like massively competitive ecosystem among Android and iOS. Then they've got to be competitive on hardware specs. And
right.
I think you see that with the Pro. I think you see that with these cameras. So, like I said, that's a segue into the cameras. I think you look at the phones Apple wanted us to compare the iPhone 11 Pro to. You look at the phones out in the world. There's a bunch of Android phones that have three cameras. There's a bunch of Android phones that have a billion features for their camera apps. And Apple basically added all of those in. Like, I don't know.
There's a ton of features in the camera app now. It's got a bunch of stuff built into it.
They didn't go full Periscope.
No, and they also didn't put a bunch of important camera settings inside the camera app. Like, some of them are still in the settings app, which is just crazy.
It is ridiculous to switch the video resolution from, like, 1080p to 4K. You have to jump out to the settings app and, like, do it. Like, what is one of the main settings that you want to change on the fly when you're like opening video? Is am I gonna blow my storage on 4K 60 right now, or do I just need to take a quick video? And that's like into the settings app. Anyhow, so let's focus on the Pro because the 11 is basically the same without the telephoto. So three cameras on the Pro. Main camera, f1.8, 12 megapixels. It appears the sensor is slightly different. It's now 100% focus pixels. Mm-hmm. My sense is that it can actually address higher ISOs. So it might be a little bit less noisy. That I think the 10S – I was just rereading our 10S review.
You were not impressed with that camera.
It's funny how tentative I was in saying, like, medium photos or medium. Like, I know how I've been using this camera for a year, and I think everyone has heard us. You just wrote that great piece. Like, they still look like smartphone photos.
Right.
And like I'm reading that review, I'm like, why was I so polite to these photos? They're like, they look weird. If you agree with me, then they look weird. Like the Smart HDR and the 10S sensor, they generated some, I think, aesthetically weird photos. You know, they pulled up all the shadows, they dropped all the highlights, everything was very flat. The sensors were very noisy, and they did a ton of noise reduction, so they crushed a lot of detail. So compared to the Pixel, compared to the like the Samsung phones, which do a lot of sharpening. I think the iPhone was just well behind. And again, it's funny how polite I was about it in the review last year.
Which, from watching the keynote online, like I haven't handled the phone, but from just a remote perspective, it seems like Apple's fully focused on sweater detail this year. Is that correct?
Well, so that's we'll get to that. So they've got a slightly different sensor for the main camera, f1.8 lens. The telephoto lens in the Pro is a little bit faster. It's f2.0.
Yep.
And then the ultra wide is f2.4, which, right. I mean, if you're doing like weird low light ultra wide stuff, like, fine. So you got three different lenses, three different sensors going on.
Apple says they're all 12 megapixels, and they insisted that they're all of basically like comparable quality. Oftentimes when you get a multi-sensor camera on Android, like the main one's great and then the wide or the telephoto are like kind of garbage. They're there, but they're clearly cheap and crappy compared to the main.
And this has been true of the iPhone as well. The telephoto, a better lens, right? Telephoto lens, like you get different foreshortening. Pros like to use it. You can like make all kinds of arguments, but a slower lens or the worst sensor, I never used it because it always looked worse to me. So hopefully the new faster lens and the tele and the slightly better sensors all around are going to make an improvement. Then they added a night mode, which is something that the Android phones have done for a long time. The night mode is really interesting. I played with it a little bit. It's automatic. So it senses that it's in the dark. You get a little yellow circle at the top. You get a meter at the bottom, like a dial, and you can select how long you want the shutter to – like you want night mode to operate basically. Right. So you can just turn it off.
It starts with like a suggestion and you can like ramp it up or down depending on what you want to do with it. But it starts like, we think in this mode it should be 3 seconds or 5 seconds or whatever, right?
Yep. So then you hit the shutter, you hold still, thing counts down 3 seconds. I think it goes up to like 9 or 10.
Yep.
They said their goal was not to make night into day, which is something that they were very critical of other phones with night modes for doing. We will have to see. So they're trying to do this like very naturalistic sort of night mode. They added a bunch of new portrait mode effects. Dieter's rolled his eyes.
The cool thing with the portrait mode is you can now do it in more lenses than you could before, right? Before you could only do it on the wide. Now you can do it. I think it's on the wide and the ultra wide or wide and tele.
Before you could do it on the telephoto. So when you switch switch to the true portrait mode on the 10S, it would kick you into the tele. And now you can kind of do it everywhere, and they're faking it a bunch of different ways. Then the big trick that they added was when you're in the main lens or the tele, the viewfinder is like the viewfinder, and then it shows you what's outside of the frame of the lens you're going to shoot. So you're using the main lens. It'll show you, here's the stuff the ultra wide can see. That is really interesting to me. I hadn't quite caught this, and then I was like playing with it more at the hands on. It is actually compositing both sensors. Right. So it's like showing you what the main sensor sees here, and then it's grabbing the stuff from the other sensor to show you the top and the bottom and like warping it to fit. So if you like jiggle the phone, they all move at different rates. it's like super impressive technically that they have everything going and warping in real time and it's showing you one image. But if you like try to break it, you can, and it's like it just shows you how cool it is. There are some features related to that. Like one, it just helps you zoom out. Like you're like, oh, I can see some more stuff, I'm gonna zoom out. But if you're like shooting a video, there's a setting that's on by default, capture outside the frame. So you're like shooting a video, somebody cut off of your frame, it will intelligently grab it from the other sensor and like map it in, which is super cool. You can turn that setting on for photos as well. It's off by default, and this is for Apple, is like, sometimes people just want to crop people out of their photos. So we didn't want to turn it on by default.
It's called Future Ex Girlfriend.
So it's there. You can turn it on. And then there's another setting to have those changes made automatically or not. So like that to me is really interesting. Like they're trying to use all these sensors together in weird ways. I do not have a good sense for what these photos look like. The main thing that I was critical of last year is that Smart HDR was way too aggressive. It looked super weird, and the camera was noisy, so the noise reduction was out of control. Apple is showing us photos. I thought this was great that they did this. I think this is like a level of honesty that most companies don't give you. If you go back and watch the keynote, they show you the technical details of every photo they're showing you. So you're just looking at them, and it's like ISO 30, 1/3000 shutter speed.
Right.
ISO 20, 1/5000 shutter speed. And it's like, yeah, any camera looks good if you have a floodlight pointed at your subject and you're capturing it like insane shutter speeds with low ISO. Like, of course. So I think those images to me don't tell a story, right? Like, did Smart HDR get better? Well, I don't know. All I saw were these incredibly well-lit images in incredibly beautiful places. We're going to have to use it. Then, Paul, there's the mode that you're talking about, the sweater mode.
Sweater mode.
And we only got to see two pictures in sweater mode.
Yeah.
One's the dude in the sweater, and then we saw like a lady in a different sweater. Those were the pictures we saw.
This is called Deep Fusion, right?
It's called Deep Fusion. So Smart HDR and the Pixel, for example, they're HDR modes. They take a base frame, and then depending on which camera you're using. So, for example, the Pixel when you pick up the camera and point at something, it starts capturing underexposed frames. Then you like hit the button. It grabs a base frame. It grabs a bunch of underexposed frames around it, merges them all together. You get an HDR photo out of the pixel. That's where you get all the extra dynamic range and detail. The iPhone does essentially the same thing, only captures one overexposed frame too, right? So like a thing that is interesting and a fun semantic argument that we will almost certainly have in mere moments is like, you're not even taking the photo when you think you're taking the photo.
What's a photo, guys?
Yeah, it's coming. I promise you it's coming.
What's a photo?
So at least with smart HDR and like the Pixel's HDR, there's a base frame, right? You like hit the button and it picks a base frame and then it like adds detail to the base frame.
Yeah.
My understanding of Deep Fusion, which is not shipping yet, we have not used it. We won't use it until it comes out. I saw a photo of a sweater, right? Like that's what I know about Deep Fusion is that it's you pick up the phone, it's capturing a bunch of images, it takes 9 images, it doesn't have a true base frame, it interpolates 2 different base frames, weaves them together, and then adds in all the other detail from the other images.
What are these 2 base frames? Are you talking about the overexposed and the underexposed?
It's unclear to me what it is actually doing. But it is basically manufacturing a photo at like the pixel level instead of this like, we see a face, we're going to use the underexposed frame to pull in detail, right?
What if the photo is the timestamp? If the moment that you clicked the shutter button, there's a timestamp, and so you're telling the phone, I want a photo that looks like things look right now, and then all the frames it captures forward and back in time, it's trying to bring those close to look like whatever stuff looked like at the timestamp, unless people were blinking or people that you don't like were in frame.
I mean, that's like what it's doing. So it shoots a Deep Fusion, shoots a total of 9 images. Before you even push the shutter, it's already captured 4 short and 4 secondary images. When you press the shutter, it takes a long exposure image. And then the neural engine fuses them all together and hits it pixel by pixel to pick like the correct tones and extract detail.
Right.
So at no point do you have like a base frame, which is like the thing to me that like all the smart HDR stuff is we have a photo that we took and we're going to use like all this additional detail from under and overexposed photos to like fill in that photo. Like this is the photo, which is basically what all HDR is, right? Like if you took HDR photos of the DSLR before, you would basically just like bracket and then merge back, right? This is like you're basically taking a video at different exposures and then you're sort of like merging that video into one photo that happened over time. It's nuts. I think I'm so excited by this just because they're pushing the level of computational photography like well beyond what cameras do.
I mean, at what point could you just take a video? You just have someone sit down for their portrait. You start filming them from one angle. Then you move around a little bit just to get some more angles. And then you like when you in post, you say, this is the angle from which I want a photo to be generated. And then you just take all that. I guess you don't get all the exposure stuff.
Paul, I'd like to officially welcome you to the what is a photo debate. Okay. Here it is. We're having it. You were just describing like basically how photos were constructed like 100 years ago, right? Like the dawn of photography, photos like took minutes and they were like, that's right.
But, so like, but the camera was staying still.
Yeah. Sure. Unless the photographer is like, you know, like a drunk Victorian. I don't know. I've never been in one of those rooms. Right? Like, I don't know. My understanding of Victorian photographers, they're all quite tipsy. This to me is we're hitting the point where the camera, when you hit the button, is no longer like trying to capture what's in front of you. It's trying to recreate an impression of that for you. And so I'm very curious to see like, hey, how does this work? Are we just getting to the point where like the iPhone's going to take a burst of photos of your friends hanging out and it's going to be like, okay, in this one she was smiling, he wasn't. We're going to like flip his face in for the smiling one, right? And this one, like they weren't looking, now they are. Right. You know those Vanity Fair photos that they do for the Hollywood issue? Where it's like famous actor in the world is lined up. Like that photo doesn't exist.
Right.
All those people come in separately and they come in little groups and they comp that photo together. We're just like quickly getting to the place where on the pixel level we're comping a photo. There's nothing to keep Apple from comping in like everyone smiling.
This is how eyeballs and brains work, right? Our eyes are just moving around and our brain constructs something that seems to us like an image or a memory. You know, in my memory, you guys were smiling at me, But in truth,
true, Paul.
In truth, they were frowns of disappointment.
Yeah. All images are composites, Neelie. Every single one of them.
I disagree. I think most...
They're composited at the neural level on your brain and at the neural engine in the iPhone. Both. Double neurons.
It's photographs that were the lie this whole time.
Yeah.
Well, so this is the thing. It's like, you're like, oh, but there's no base frame of a moment in time. But there was never a perfect moment in time instant, because that thing, like, it's like Zeno's paradox. You know, you get halfway, like a second is forever, half a second. Like, the exposure is never like instantaneous in like the like Newtonian sense of, you know, the, you know, limit going to blah 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this thing that
that was some incredible calculus right there.
Right. The thing that's blowing your mind that there's like no base frame. Well, the base frame was a composite in the first place. We just like didn't think of it that way because we didn't have the technology to like think about what it was, you know, doing over time.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Well, so right now there is no base frame because this feature has not shipped. It's one picture of a sweater.
That's true.
And so,
two pictures of sweaters.
Yeah. I'm very excited to have this argument when this does ship and, you know, we get some more details on how it actually works. I think there are some philosophical questions about computational photography that we should have, because most people think you hit the shutter opens and closes, it hits a sensor, that is the photo.
Right.
And if we're quickly coming to a place where your smartphone, which is the most common camera in existence, is making things not look exactly like reality, looking like enhanced reality, where it's able to add detail to an environment where you were not perceiving detail, like where it's basically like creating the impression of reality that you wanted, but that wasn't there. Like we should just start talking about that.
We're going to ban all journalists from buying iPhone 12s because the pictures they take won't be accurate to reality. And so like in the future, journalists are going to be using crappier cameras than everybody else.
In reality,
Paul light, will be frowning in all photos.
Light is traveling at multiple angles, and sensors typically only capture one angle of the light that's traveling. So theoretically, you could see around objects if you could see all the angles of light.
Yes. And then you get one of those cameras, you get one of those smartphones that have like 45 lenses on the back, like the light show cameras.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is just where what's interesting to me about this is, one, it didn't ship. My understanding is that, like, this was supposed to be the feature, and they missed it, which is like a big iOS 13 story. Like, the iOS 13 release cycle is pretty messy.
It's cattywampus is a technical term.
So, like, again, we have one picture of a sweater that everybody saw, and then, like, the second picture of a sweater that we got to see as well. That's it. That's what we know of Deep Fusion. Does it work? Does it not work? It could never ship, right, which is the thing. But you've got these three cameras in the back of the Pro. You've got night mode. You've got new effects in portrait mode. You've got this Deep Fusion thing. You see them aggressively having to chase, in particular, the Chinese phone manufacturers. Because if they want to sell a bunch of iPhones in China and no one's using iMessage and there's no lock-in, then they have to compete on specs and hardware. And you see Apple having to do that in the Apple way, I think, is really interesting. So they've added a bunch of lenses. They've added a bunch of effects. They've added a bunch of modes. We should talk about the front camera. It's been upgraded.
It's 12. And then they do the thing that Samsung does where you can choose between wide or not so wide, but it's still the same lens, basically.
Yeah. So when you have it in portrait, it like crops in a little bit. And when you rotate it to landscape, it crops out a little bit. It's neat. Like, I think the wide angle selfie lens on the Pixel is like still the best demo that I've given of a phone a long time. It's the thing people are the most excited about. So it's great. They like competed there a little bit.
I will say the camera app overall is like right on the edge of like becoming Samsung-y in terms of, we're going to like give you a bunch of features because we're going to impress you with featureitis, and then you don't really know how to use any of them or find them and you forget about them. It's like almost there. You know, they did this thing where they changed the shutter button, so you hold your finger down on the shutter button to record a quick video, and then it's like, well, what if you want burst? Well, then you slide it down for burst, and you slide it up to, like, stick it into, like, a stuck recording thing so you don't have to hold your finger down. Very clever. Once you see it, you're like, oh, that's really clever. That's great. You can, like, swipe over into the lens frame from that shutter area, and it'll, like, reveal other different options for you. Instead of switching modes, you can, like, get to like, that's where your, you know, flash on or off settings are. Also a very clever, nice touch, but again, a thing you need to discover. So they've packed enough into this camera now where they've hit the limit of what feels Apple-esque in a camera interface of like simplicity that literally every single Android manufacturer copied for years.
Yeah.
But now Apple is like getting to the place where like they need to figure out how to cram this many things into a camera interface and still have it be comprehensible. It's ironic that I'm complaining that there's not one more setting there for the HD stuff for video, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, they've reorganized it a little bit. They have a new font, which Phil Schiller called out on stage, SF Camera, which he said is, quote, so pro, which was very funny. It was like, he was obviously making a joke, but it was very funny.
Why didn't they go into depth on that? Like, what is different about SF Camera? Is it so, 'cause it looks like that weird font on camera lenses or something?
I have no idea. I will say we did not look at it deeply enough compared to that. It was not the focus of our extremely frantic hands-on time was like, let's look at these fonts. So that's a pro. I mean, like they added an 18-watt USB-C charger in the box. Like I heard Joanna for the pro, not for the 11. I think I heard Joanna Stern like cheer when that happened because she's been asking for it for a long time. But it's USB-C to Lightning. It seems like it's a pretty big charger, actually. Like, I don't think Apple is great at making small chargers. Like, there's a part of me that's like, you should just let Anchor do it. They sell them in the stores now.
But the iPhone 11 is still 5-watt, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I did not know until Dieter told me on the Vergecast last week that the iPhone still shipped with 5-watt chargers.
Sure does.
It's ridiculous.
And then the OLED display is, it's 18% more efficient.
Something like
in
that.
Terms of power. Yeah. It's 800 nits brighter than normal, 1200 nits brighter. If you're doing an HDR mode like Dolby Vision.
Yeah. So, but only in the peaks is it 1200 bright. A lot of people say, oh, it's 1200 brighter. It's actually only 1200 brighter in the peaks in HDR mode. So like, you know, the brightest thing in an HDR video can get up to 1200, but the number you should actually care about is 800 brighter outside.
Yeah. So it's 800 nits normally outside. If you watch a Dolby Vision movie from iTunes or whatever, the peaks can hit 1200. That is actually impressive. I have not been impressed with the iPhone XS's claimed HDR display.
Mm-hmm.
This one actually looks pretty bright to me, but they renamed it. It is now the Super Retina XDR display.
Which leaves them space for next year to call it the Super Retina ProMotion XDR display when they finally increase the refresh rate to match everybody else.
Kill me.
That's coming for you. Super Retina ProMotion XDR display.
Yeah. So they pulled the XDR from their Pro XDR display they put out with the Mac Pro, which is like an insanely expensive display. And it, like, you know, perfectly color calibrated. It has this like peak brightness that nothing else can do, blah, 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 blah. And now they're like, our phone has it too. And it's like, this is just about as bright as a Samsung display. I don't know what to tell you. But it looks really nice. It has this thing that I don't quite understand that I'm going to dig on called spatial audio. The iPhone 11 has this too. So it supports vision and Atmos, has all the lights. There they are. But then it has something called spatial audio. So you're watching, I think the demo that they showed us was Godzilla King of the Monsters, which is a horrible movie. Just, I have to tell you, it's not a good movie. I own it. That's the mistake I made. I bought it on iTunes. I own it.
Why?
Because I'm dumb.
Okay.
I don't know. It was like, you know, it was like not out to rent yet, but it was the thing that was dumb enough that I wanted to watch, so I own it.
Yep.
I got windowed into owning this movie. Anyway, so they start playing it. I literally said, oh God, not this movie. The poor person doing the demo was like, are you okay? It's like, no, it's just a bed. Anyway, that was the demo. So that movie is in Vision and Atmos on iTunes. Looks very bright, lasers out of a monster's eyes, all the good stuff is happening, explosions are bright. And then their thing is, last year the iPhone XS had wide stereo, which was indeed very impressive. Like, the iPhone XS is one of the best sounding phones I've seen in a while, at least from its internal speakers. Now they've added this thing called spatial audio, which sits alongside Atmos. So like, games on the iPhone can use the spatial audio encoder, but they don't have to be Atmos games. And then, like, Atmos movies get the benefit of, like, spatial audio. Like I said, I don't quite understand it. I'm going to dig on it and figure out what it means. But there's basically the second audio encoding next to regular wide stereo. So, like, a YouTube video, this podcast gets the benefit of wide stereo, which basically was, like, a crosstalk eliminator for the left and right channel. So it sounded wider. Spatial audio is, like, make it supposed to sound like it's around you and I'm unclear how it plays with Atmos, but like a YouTube video doesn't get spatial audio by default.
Are you just talking about the speakers? This doesn't help me at all if I plug in. Well, first I buy a Lightning to I buy an adapter so I can plug my headphones.
Yeah.
But theoretically, I could plug headphones into this. Or where, you know, Apple sells AirPods, right? I could connect headphones to a phone and then hear, like, why would you do this? Why would you watch a movie with surround sound from the phone speakers?
Well, I think a thing that is true is that headphones are now so complicated and annoying that people just run their speakers all the time. People watch a lot of content just on their phone. I'd do it. So it sounds good. The speaker phone is like better because of it. That's the thing people use. And then a thing that is true, and I say it out loud, is AirPods sound bad. And so like you might have a better experience watching a movie through your phone speakers than your AirPods, which is a real line that Apple's walking up to with these phones.
The spatial stuff helps you none at all with headphones.
No, as far as I can tell. This is all speaker-based stuff. So that's like the big set of changes. The 11 has the spatial audio too. Is there anything else from the Pro? That's like it. It's basically, and again, I have to keep saying this because it's on the list, faster LTE.
Right.
But you have to be in a place with a faster LTE network for that to work for you.
Yeah, which is more likely for you to find than 5G. And so there's no 5G iPhone.
That's true. That's a big thing that's missing. That was There were two extremely dumb Twitter fights about this event that went down.
Yeah.
One was about whether people were clapping or crying during the event.
Yep.
I would say if people who have followed us for a long time know that we started out in Engadget. First Apple event I ever went to, I went to with Ryan Block, and he just looked at me and said, "Don't clap. Everyone's going to clap. We don't clap. We're journalists." I assume that conversation was over in 2008. I'm happy we're having it again 11 years from now. By the way, the media doesn't clap. Like ever. Apple employees are there and they clap.
Yep.
Maybe some people clap. And then the crying, they played like a heart-wrenching ad for the Apple Watch where it was like saving people's lives. Yeah. And there were like babies who weren't dead. And like, yeah, some people got emotional, but like, I don't know. That's the point of the ad. I did not cry, but I completely understand why that ad would make you a little misty because it, A, Apple is good at doing that. And B, like it's what it's designed to do.
Can I ask you a question about how emotions work? Because I don't understand them.
Yeah.
So I'm okay, and I get it, that if something is like genuinely like touching, heart-wrenching enough that like if you tear up, like you can't be blamed for that. That's not like you being a bad journalist. That's just like real human, genuine emotion.
Yeah.
Great. Fully on board. If Apple had created something so incredibly amazing and good that you had the opposite spontaneous reaction of you just couldn't not clap in the same way you can't not cry, would that be okay?
I don't think I've ever in my life felt I can't clap. So,
Yeah.
Like nothing has ever struck me as now I'm clapping and I don't know why.
Like I think the clapping is not okay, but if you let out a whoop, like sometimes a whoop can like sneak out.
Like a cry of pain. You know?
Yeah.
It's audible.
I mean, I think if you go
I had a cry of pain during this event when I saw that it was still Lightning on the phone instead of USB-C. Yeah.
I mean, if you go back and watch Apple event streams from years past, you can definitely hear me like laughing like quite loudly through some of them. Like whatever, like it's a show, you're an audience. I just think journalist clapping has been litigated for so long. The fact there was a Twitter fight about it, just like it's exhausting.
Yeah.
But anyway,
the other Twitter fight was, should they have made a 5G iPhone? And the reasoning is people are hanging on to phones for 3, 4, 5 years. In theory, 5G in 3, 4, 5 years is going to be a real thing. And so to future-proof yourself because you're going to upgrade on a slower cadence, it would be nice to buy a 5G phone now. I do not agree with this.
I absolutely do not agree with this.
What's your reasoning?
I understand that people are keeping their phones for longer and longer now. Great. But that also means, like, you want a reason to upgrade your phone when it's time. Like, one of the reasons people keep their phones for a long time is the year-over-year iterative upgrades are not worth it. There are no 5G networks now. The 5G chipsets are bad. So, okay, yep, maybe 12 months from now or 24 months from now, you're going to live in a city and someone has finally won their foolish race to 5G, fine. Okay, at that point, like you're still not missing out. Like you're still operating LTE world. You've still got your old phone. It's not like you got some magic new capability. And when you do spend the money to upgrade, you will receive a very meaningful return for that investment.
Right.
Versus any additional money you spend now getting nothing, and then hopefully one day, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems dumb. You're paying for hope, and I don't think you should pay for hope.
And no. Think of how much of your day you spend away from the maximum throughput of LTE. And then also think about 4 hours of battery life. Kiss it goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one of the reasons they made the phones heavier and thicker this year is to get that bigger battery in there. That's a promise they're making now. They cannot go backwards. Right. They can't shave five hours off the max's battery next year when they add a 5G radio. So they're right. And Apple thinks their 5G phones are like all but done. Right, they know what chips they're going to use. They probably designed them themselves at this point.
Do they know what chips they're going to use because they had those the whole thing with Intel and they got the things with the stuff? And yeah, maybe they don't know.
Well, they bought bought Intel. They bought they know what chips they're going to use. They just they have to manage that team better than Intel did.
I wouldn't be surprised if the next iPhone is not 5G.
I think there's a lot of rumors out there that they will put out one with 5G. And maybe they'll just do the thing, right?
One fancy model. The 11XS Max.
5G.
5G.
Pro LTE. I mean, the names are out of control. But Ars Technica, John Brodkin had a great story at Ars Technica this week that, like, Verizon is lighting up NFL stadiums with 5G. It's, like, the big promotion they're doing. And, like, they can't even get the whole stadium. Right, like the small print is like certain seating areas will have 5G, and it's like you can't even get the whole stadium. Like I understand stadiums are quite large, but they're smaller than cities.
Yeah,
the way I would deploy 5G is just put some loose Ethernet cables on the ground, and then people carry adapters and they plug that into their phone, and you know I feel like you can reach as many people for a lower cost.
Oh, that's cyberpunk. We could like go back to the days of jacking in.
Yeah,
right?
Right. In like old phone booths, just have like hundreds of Ethernet dongles in them. Absolutely. Like if you right now, if you're an executive at like a Netgear or a Linksys, which are probably merged at this point, I don't even know. But you should pitch like the Netgear 5G network. It's just you stringing Ethernet cables and like old Netgear switches around. Like you got like a warehouse for those. Let's go nuts.
Yeah. No, but like seriously, anytime there's a hard line, there's like an Ethernet you can use, you plug it in, right? Like if it's there and you're sitting down, you're like, oh, well, this will be faster. Like there should we should go back to those days. Like internet cafes should have hard lines.
The future of the iPhone is an Ethernet dongle, I think, is where we've arrived in this conversation. Anyway, it does not have 5G. That was the other big Twitter fight that occurred.
Yeah.
Like, is this a mistake? I do not think anyone cares. I think right now it is tech demos. The 5G networks in the United States are basically millimeter wave networks. Chris Welch has tested a bunch of them. They're very fast if you are standing on the right street corner in Chicago. You need that mid-band 5G network to get online. That's going to take a long time.
Yeah. My whole thing is like the very best 5G chipset available today to ship in a phone today is going to be utter garbage compared to what's going to ship in 4 years.
Yeah. And 3 years. And I think that's also, it is also true that Apple literally like signed its deal with Qualcomm, settled a lawsuit, spent billions on Intel's modem team.
Yeah.
Like they're in a little bit of a reset around its chips, and we know that they're very particular about their chips. Speaking of chips and wireless chips, you want to talk about U1? Did you figure out what U1 is?
So it's an ultra wide band chip, so it can kick out an ultra wide band signal, and it is able to see other ultra wide band chips that kick out ultra wide band signals, and then they're able to locate each other in space. So you're able to be like, oh, that car is over there, or that iPhone is over there, and I can AirDrop to it. Those are the two examples they gave us. The AirDrop thing is coming. You can like point your phone at another phone, and like they can AirDrop more easily. It like pop that person to the top of your AirDrop list. The other example they gave was like point it at a car to unlock it. You could also see pointing it at like a tile.
Yeah, that was the rumor going in. Like Apple's doing a tile killer, right?
Yeah, but like this isn't like radar. It's not like mapping a room. There might be AR applications for it someday. Who knows? But it's like a thing that they clearly aren't taking full advantage of right now that's in there that is able to detect other things that are like it.
It is kind of like radar. So the technology... What makes it different than a typical wireless radio? Like, you know how Wi-Fi has channels, right? Or think of a Cat5 cable, right? Like you've got multiple wires in it, right? Mm-hmm. Like... typical wireless is narrow through one of those channels at a time, right? Inside of a range, it's narrow in one channel typically, and then you multiplex them if you're trying to do more. And it's a continuous stream. It's like a sine wave or whatever. Where ultra wide band fills the whole spectrum all at once with a big pulse, but the pulse is very short. That's the technological difference. And that pulse design makes it good for this location stuff. And then the location stuff makes it potentially like really great in conjunction with other wireless technologies, because if you know exactly where something is, it's easier to send a lot of data to it instead of blasting a lot of data in all directions.
Yeah, you can beamform to the thing.
I'm very excited about U1. I hope it's not just total, complete proprietary, patented.
Paul, my friend.
I want nice things.
Paul, what are you doing, man?
I take it back. I'm not optimistic anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you're like, you know how everyone thought you were smiling, but really you're frowning? I got news for you, buddy.
How about this? When you're taking a photo, theoretically, the UWB or the ultra-wideband can find things inside a very small area, like maybe with 10-centimeter precision or maybe even less. So you take a photo of your friends, and all the ones that are holding iPhones, their faces aren't blurred, but then everybody else's faces are blurred.
Okay.
Make it like the blue bubble of photography.
I see what you're saying.
It's just a thought.
It's just another way to be mean to your friends with an iPhone. Yeah. Wait, so just to zoom out on U1 a little bit, we only noticed it because it was on like the spec sheet slide at the end of the presentation. They didn't say it on stage. They didn't mention it. They didn't say a word about it. They put up the specs and says Apple designed U1 chip. Then we like out there, we're like looking at the phones or talking to people. They brought up the car door thing twice, right? You can imagine unlocking a car. It's like, what car has U1? So maybe, Paul, that's the first opening up of proprietary, right? Like cars will suddenly have similar chips in them. You're going to unlock your car with your phone. Maybe. Who knows? But that's the example. I think the thing that happened was they were supposed to launch this like tag, which we've seen all of this rumors about. There's been some leaks. There's some like codes, like the whole thing, this like Tile competitor. It was supposed to be on stage. The U1 is there to support it, right? Like I lost my keys. I'm in the room. The U1 chips can see each other. It's like turned to the right, right? Like magic. It's in that drawer. You're getting closer because that's what it can do. But they didn't ship it, so they just like put it on the screen, and they're like, they have this fanciful story about unlocking your car and AirDrop getting better.
NXP, I don't know if you're familiar with NXP. They have put out a press release. They have created a concept VW car, and their concept key fob uses ultra wideband, so that instead of like clicking a button, you can like make a little like key turning gesture or some other little gesture that only you know, and that unlocks your car.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay. Gesture to unlock?
Like you're holding the key fob and you like go like in a circle, and then that's what unlocks the car.
Whoa.
Can someone tell NXPs that buttons are a proven technology and gestures are often quite bad and worse than buttons?
Like, did they never use the Wii?
I would also like to issue a press release in response to NXP. What is journalism but rival press releases in response to small companies? Yeah.
In automotive alone, UWB will enable automated trailer hitch activation,
in-cabin
passenger detection, automated valet parking, hands-free parking, lot access, and drive-through payments, to name a few.
I mean, those are all things I think there is some sort of like weird 802 dot standard around this stuff. Anyway, it's there. I'm all but certain it's there to support this like tag competitor, Tile competitor called Tag.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't show up. So that's two, right? Deep Fusion, I think, was supposed to be the big feature of the camera. They teased it. It's coming later. They're not going to tease a hardware product. They already did that with AirPower. We know how that went. I think they've learned that lesson. They're going to wait for it to be done and ready. But I think this chip is there to fundamentally support that thing and then whatever other range it uses.
Why do you think they didn't ship reverse wireless charging from the phone to like AirPods?
Because I don't think anybody cares.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't occur to me that I want to do that ever.
It's real cute in the Samsung ad. And watching the Samsung ad, it's like, yeah, but I'm probably, how often am I in a coffee shop and someone has the exact same phone as me? But that happens a little more often with iPhone.
Yeah, and I think it'd be cool. Like, we were just traveling. It would be cool if I didn't have to carry an Apple Watch charger around. And I could just, like, put my watch on the phone and charge it at night. That'd be neat. Yeah. But, like,
I think that's why they didn't include it, because the Apple Watch uses slightly different charging than standard, you know, whatever they use for everything else. And so they couldn't figure out how to get that on the iPhone.
You think?
It's a wacky conspiracy theory, but... That's my wacky conspiracy theory.
Well, so the good news is they make all of those products. So one imagines they could probably make that change. Speaking of the watch, we should take a break, come back, talk about the watch, talk about the iPad. We're going to review them. It's going to happen. I will tell you right now, I think most people should buy an iPhone 11, but we're going to put that to the test. So like, stay tuned for that stuff. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about the Apple Watch and the iPad.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. Here's the story of innovation told in 5 words. Try. Explore. Connect. Pivot. Transform. See what happened there? As soon as Connect entered the story, innovation became achievable. That's why Deloitte works with clients and tech alliances to bring together the people, ideas, and technologies to overcome, solve, and of course, transform. Connect to what matters for innovation. Start at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Co-Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
All right, Dieter Bohn.
Yeah.
Tell
every
me.
Week.
Every week you complain about the always-on display of the Apple. No. Tell me about this Apple Watch.
So it's the Series 5. It has the S5 system on chip, which means whatever. It means that they've got new stuff in it. But it's the same processor. So what's new is they have a display that is called LTPO. It's a custom version of an OLED display. If we want to get deeper into the technicals, you could make me open up OLEDinfo.com or something and figure it out. But that combined with some of the custom like processors they have allows them to have a variable refresh rate on the screen from 60 hertz all the way down to 1 hertz. And that, they say, is what allows them to have an always-on screen on the Apple Watch so that you can just see the time without having to make a stupid motion with your wrist, and you're not going to offend anybody by looking at the time. It's just sort of there. And I'm very happy about that. So they added that. They added a compass. And there was like one more thing.
It's cell band. So the reason it's called the S5, right. The processor component of the S5 chip is the same. They added the compass and they added a wider array of cell bands so they can support automatic emergency calling for the cell models
internationally
in more countries.
That's it. Exactly. The prices, I think, basically stayed the same, which is great. They've got like a bunch of different casings now. So there's the stainless steel, there's titanium in a couple of different finishes, there's ceramic, and then there's steel. And then there's, you know, the Hermes stuff and the Nike stuff and blah, 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 blah. So I'm very excited for it just because it has the always on screen. It's something I've wanted since literally the original one. It's something that it's like the one thing Android Wear had on the Apple Watch. So it's great. That's great. I do wish that they had put sleep tracking in.
Another thing that was heavily rumored that didn't show up.
I'm using sleep tracking. I use Sleep Plus Plus.
That's a great name.
It's the best. Yeah. It automatically tracks on the Apple Watch. The visualizations are like okay, but it does pipe into Apple's health app so you can like get all the graphs you want of, you know, whatever. I've realized that the variability of like when I go to bed and when I wake up is like all over the map. In a way I didn't know before. It like didn't occur to me. So that was fun. I wish that had been built in, but it's not. So the big question is, Why not? Is it battery life? I don't know. They say that they still get 18 hours of battery life with the always-on display. We'll see. I think that they under-promised on battery life on the Series 4. I think the Series 4 battery life is way better than they said it was. I get more than 18 hours on it all the time. I'll be curious to see if the Series 5 also over-delivers on the promised battery lifetime.
Apologies if this is a dumb question, but if you slept with the watch on, when would you charge the watch?
So this is a fascinating question. I don't. It's different every time.
What is a photo?
Yeah. No. So like, I'll charge it when you go to take a shower. But usually, you know, I don't know about you, but like, that's not long enough to like fully charge it. And so like, maybe you like before you go to bed, you throw it on the charger while you like do your like, you know, brush your teeth routine. Check the windows are open or closed or whatever they're supposed to be. A little bit there. So like, I'm actually charging my Apple Watch in little bips and bobs a couple of times a day now instead of just like throw it on the thing overnight. Now, eventually, like, I get out of sync, it's just going to die, and so I just have to throw it on the charger overnight, and I don't track my sleep that night. But I like sleep tracking. I think it's neat.
I hate wearing something on my wrist when I sleep. That's, like, the thing that's kept me away from it.
I'm going to convert you, because having your wristwatch be your alarm and having the incredibly good haptics and taptics on the Apple Watch be the first thing is so much better than a beeping alarm. You have a chance to wake up without annoying anybody in the room, and it's less intrusive. The one thing that Withings smartwatch does is it tracks your sleep cycle enough so that it can know what stage of sleep you're in, and you give it a window of like 45 minutes or 20 or whatever, and then when you're in that lighter stage of sleep, that's when it sets the alarm off on your wrist.
Yeah.
So you feel less grumpy waking up, which is great.
Can I tell you a story about how I woke up this morning?
Okay.
Yes.
This is a true story. So SFO is a disaster, as you know. The main runway is down for maintenance. So my flight was delayed. I landed at like 2:30 in the morning. I got home. I went to bed at 4 in the morning. So this is so I fall asleep, dead to the world, like 8 a.m. Like I'm 4 hours into sleep, just like dead to the world. And Becky like taps me on the forehead and just goes, "Are you serious?" Because she had gotten locked out and was like ringing the doorbell, and I was too dead asleep to hear it. So she had to go get the extra key and unlock the door. And I will tell you, any situation is better than being woken up with your wife going, "Are you serious?" like in your face. So I hear what you're saying. Gentle tactics, whatever. Like it's a low floor for me right now. So they dropped the Series 4 out of the line.
Yeah.
They're keeping the Series 3 at $199.
Which is great.
This is already, and there was another Twitter fight about whether the Apple Watch is a hit product. The Apple Watch is a hit product. It is the dominant smartwatch in the world. It is cruising towards being like the dominant watch in the world. At $199, like every kid who has an iPhone gets one of these for Christmas, right? And that's where they're at. I do think the always on display in the Series 5, that's one of those things where I find myself wondering about the expense of the extra finishes, right? Like I bought just the stainless. No, I bought I think I'm wearing the aluminum one, right?
Yeah.
Cause I was like, I'm going to buy it. I buy the Series 4, the screen's bigger. I like the apps, like whatever. It's like finally making sense to me. I've enjoyed wearing it this year. Now I want a Series 5. If I had spent the extra, cause of the always on display, that's okay, it. Yep. That's the reason I want it. If I had spent the extra money on a finish, I would feel extremely upset.
Oh, because right.
Right. If I'd spent $800 on this thing, I'd be like, this is ridiculous. Like, I just want this one feature. And now I'm like, I have to re-up.
And the Series 4 has an LTPO display.
Yes, they both have LTPO displays.
But it doesn't have the controller to, you know, ratchet the hertz up and down. So.
Right. So the Apple has a patent on these LTPO displays, or these like lower power OLED displays. You can like fall down a deep hole of like OLEDinfo.com and like weird supply chain manufacturing reports and like what LTPO could mean. By the way, my hat is off to the people who write breathless supply chain reports about extremely niche display technologies, because you read them and it's like, this could change everything. And it's like, like four people know what you're talking about, and I love you. So you can fall down a hole and like read those and read the patents. It's like quite fun. But it's the controller that does this variable refresh rate. And so when you put it down, it basically drops into what you would call a low power mode. The second hand on the analog faces like disappears, and the screen only updates once a second, one hertz a second. And then it's variable. So like sometimes it's only running at like 30 hertz, right? It's like it can ramp all the way up and all the way down. So they're doing a lot of power management just with the display.
If it's running one update a second, why can't it refresh and show the second hand move every second? Would there be screen tearing?
Because the second you look at it, it'll show you the second hand. It'll brighten up and show you the second hand.
Yeah.
So their thing is like you're not looking at it.
No, but they show it off like you're doing cool exercises and you're totally looking at it.
Right. So when you're doing cool exercises and you're like looking at it, literally the stopwatch goes from measuring hundredths of a second to 1 second increments. And then when you just like look at it, it'll show you the more granular time.
When you say look at it, you mean do the gesture.
It's not really a gesture. You just like turn, like right now, like it doesn't show me anything.
Right now it's a blank screen until you look at it and you kind of got to move a little bit. And Apple's demo, this very strong selling point, because I've always hated the off screen. It just bothers me seeing other people wear this phone with the screen off or this watch with the screen off. But the way Apple sells it, it's like, think of all these times how inconvenient it has been to turn your wrist and look at to brighten up the screen or to turn on the screen. So what I'm saying is like, you still have to do that to get the screen to be moving, is what you're saying.
Right. To get that refresh rate up above one hertz, you got to move your wrist. And so they're doing a bunch of stuff, right? So if you have like a sweeping second hand, it's animating faster than one hertz, right? So like the sweeping second hand disappears.
Or if you're actually actively interacting with it and scrolling, it the screen refreshes faster at a normal screen rate. The thing that you're stuck on, Paul, I think, is like there are certain things that the activities you do with the Apple Watch where it won't let the screen dim. So like if you're actively exercising, you can like set it to like not go into the screen dim mode, and just so you can like look at it whenever you want without having to do the gesture.
Yeah.
Like that's possible.
I mean, I think all of this framing is hilarious because even the like – their presentation of the always on screen made it seem like a revolution when every watch in history until Apple put this watch out showed you the time at all times.
Yeah.
So like it's a classic sort of like they've reset expectations and now they're at, but that to me is like a reason alone to upgrade. And it's the first time I've thought I'm really happy I didn't buy the nicer finish. Like I really was going to buy the black stainless steel and I didn't because I wasn't confident that I would like it.
Yeah.
And so whatever, but I'm happy. And now I'm like, okay, I'm gonna buy the next one. I know I like it. It's worth the money. But then the Series 6 is gonna come out. And like, am I just gonna be mad?
Yeah.
And that's like interesting to me.
You know, we're gonna review them, but our advice on the iPhones is like most people should get the iPhone 11, not the iPhone Pro, right? And I think with the watches, most people should get the aluminum. Some people should even get the Series 3. And it's very clear that like Apple makes some stuff and then they make some stuff for people that just want to spend more money to have a nicer thing.
Yeah.
Right. And like the watch is a very clear example of that. It's like, would you like to throw away $300 to feel like you have a nicer thing? Here you go.
Yeah. The amount of like Apple's entire product line is like a PhD thesis in price elasticity.
Yeah.
Right. Like, how much do you care about how much things cost? Mm-hmm. And like for some Apple customers, the answer is I do not at all. Like whatever it is, just give me the best one, Apple. I shall have it. And then I think now as they've expanded that market and they've like sold so many phones and they're in competition around the world, they've needed to lower those prices and get more competitive. But they definitely have that part of the product line where it's like, I just want the best one Apple makes.
Speaking of PhD theses, Neil, I want to commend you for not getting into the debate of what constitutes pro and sending me off spinning. Thank you for that.
Here's what I believe constitutes pro. Okay. Brands are weird and they don't care about language.
Apple in particular, like stop trying to make sense of Apple's product names. What does Air mean? Nobody knows. What does Pro mean?
Wait, this Nobody is perfect. Knows. We're going to segue to the iPad.
Stop trying.
What is the iPad line right now is at once the most sensible, understandable version of this line that has ever existed.
Yep.
And also the wackiest.
They just made it wackier.
Like it, I kind of, I get it. Like you like you're far away from it. It's in the distance and you're like, oh, I see the shape of this. And you get up close. And you're like, a number of things here don't line up with the image that it formed in my head. So so this was a big surprise. No one was expecting this at all.
Up until like the day before. Yeah.
Greg Joswiak gets on stage. He's like, there's a new iPad. So that we're replacing the 9.7-inch $329 iPad. Now it's got a 10.2-inch display. It's got an A10 Fusion chip in it, a veritable antique, but here it is. And it's got a smart keyboard connector.
Yep.
That's the iPad, everybody. Like, see, like, they just revved.
Same price,
$329, which in many ways is, like, kind of like the best deal in tech right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yep. Like, that's
really is.
That's a lot of computer for $300. They actually put up a slide. Have we done this? Have we identified what computer that is? They put up a slide showing a Windows PC. Like, this is the top selling Windows PC this year. And I think Jaws even was like, yeah, I know, because it's like ugly. But they showed it and they're like, the iPad is so much more. Like, the iPad lets you do so much more. It has all these apps, blah, 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 blah. And then iPad OS with the real browser and so on and so forth. This thing is made to, A, go after the education market. Has a keyboard connector. You can use a smart keyboard. And it's kind of there to, like, challenge Chromebooks and cheap Windows laptops.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be successful at that. The 329 one wasn't. Maybe. The keyboard connector might help. But also, Apple Smart Keyboard costs $160.
Isn't there, like, a cheaper Logitech one, though?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but whatever. There's other things that hold the iPad back in education, but we shouldn't get into it. This is the best deal in tech. Like, if you don't want to give your relative an Apple Watch, you can give them this iPad.
That's so rude. Do not do that. Yo, no. That you're like, I'm related to you and enough to, I'm related to you enough. I'm related to you enough to demonstrate like a couple $100 worth of care as a gift.
Yeah.
Like, there's like a lot of those relationships. Mm-hmm. That's AirPods or the $199 watch.
Okay.
And even the $199 watch is like, you have to know that they don't know that there's a better watch. Like, AirPods are like a home run. There's better AirPods.
Mm. Right.
And even if they already have AirPods and you gave them some more AirPods, it's still like, yep, you got more of the good thing. The watch, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I bought you the one from 2 years ago and the screen doesn't turn on all the time. Like, I love you that much, kid. Right?
Everybody will know that you're poor.
Right. You throw someone a $300 iPad, it's like, I don't really like you. I found this in the basement.
Wow.
like that's a rough gift if it's not exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. Okay. So there's the iPad mini. Then there's the iPad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then it's 10. That's the 10.2 Lightning connector headphone jack.
Right. Apple Pencil support also.
Yes. First gen Apple Pencil. The silly pencil.
Then there's the relatively recent iPad Air, which is basically a bunch of parts from like year and a half ago iPad Pro with some other stuff, and they put it together into like this middle zone iPad, Lightning connector, keyboard connector.
First gen pencil.
And then there's the like iPad Pro.
Yeah.
So there's four like mini iPad Air Pro.
Well, so there's a clear line. You want to talk about what Pro means?
Yeah.
Just a second. One second. The Air still exists?
The Air still exists.
I was not aware.
They brought it back.
So the difference with the Air is it's got the better screen?
Right. So the iPad mini has an A12 Bionic and a True Tone display. The iPad Air has an A12 Bionic, a True Tone display, Lightning connector, headphone jack. Then in the middle is the iPad, 10.2 non-laminated, $329, A10 Fusion chip, right? Like, it's just like a worse product than the Mini or the Air.
Right.
But it's the cheap big one. And I think the presence of the cheap big one is, we don't account for it enough when we talk about technology. But like the XR and the iPhone 11 also fit into the realm of like the cheaper big one.
Yeah, half of all Windows laptops
are the cheap big ones.
The cheap big ones.
Would you like to look at a mediocre 15-inch display? That will be $400. Like that product is very popular. Like how many horrible 65-inch TVs are sold? That's the cheap big one.
Yeah.
And it's just like a real product that exists, and Apple made a cheap big iPad. But then there's the hard cut.
Yeah.
Right? And then there's the iPad Pros, which are like $799 and up, although they're getting discounted. They've got USB-C, no headphone jack, like faster GPUs, basically. They're still A12s, right?
Yep, smaller bezels.
A12Xs or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like the next generation. They've got the variable refresh rate display, like the whole thing, and that's up there for Pro. But they all run the same software and the same apps.
Yep.
Like they haven't yet, I don't think the iPad Pros have yet, like, developed a software ecosystem of Pro stuff. Right. Like it all works on everything. So that's like, I think, the next big split that's coming.
They're starting to develop that stuff, but you could still run that pro stuff on the smaller ones. It's just that nobody who buys the cheaper ones tries to do it. Right. So
just like you can run Photoshop on a crappy old Mac or whatever.
I mean, these iPads are very powerful. And like A10 chip, like a lot of the pro apps that I like on the iPad are music apps. And there'll be something where it's like, you know, this one can do like 40 simultaneous sample playbacks. But then with A12, you can do 80 or, you know, stuff like that. There's stuff where you can do the same capabilities, but maybe you can do more of it at once or faster on the A12. iPad.
Yeah.
It's just the incompatible peripherals. I understand if you've got a parts bin iPad, right? But when you're coming out with new iPads with old stuff, like I guess I understand that it's cheaper for them to do it, but like the pencil incompatibility.
Yeah. The pencil is there's very clearly a Lightning ecosystem of iPads and a USB ecosystem of iPads.
So what you're saying is the iPhone Pro should have USB-C.
I am saying that just because I want to see if Dieter can sigh so much he passes out. Yes, right? Like, if you just want to, like, put it out there, like, that is the thing they did with the iPad. But I don't think these words mean anything to Apple. I think in the end, everyone just thinks of them as iPads and iPhones, and they have a bunch of, like, signifiers around those core names that do some thing. Just like I don't think anybody thinks of the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro as being fundamentally distinct products.
Right. Well, so there's this bizarre world called personal computers. And I bought a keyboard for my personal computer. And then I got another computer. Guess what? Keyboard works with the new one. Can you believe it? It's wild.
Well, if you had one of the three Lightning accessories in the world, it might work with your new iPad. Anyway, it was a kind of a surprise announcement. You get why there's a lot of rumors there's going to be another event in October with the new 16-inch MacBook Pro, maybe some revved iPad Pros. You understand why they wouldn't want to like toss out this iPad. Although they could have just done it as a press release.
They could have.
Nothing in the world would have stopped them from doing this as a press release.
They need to give it at least a little bit of juice, a little bit of love, to like, because they really do need to catch up to Chromebooks and education.
Yeah, I think if they had like the tag for the iPhone, this iPad would have been cut and relegated to a press release.
Ooh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think if they had shipped some of the other stuff that was rumored that's in the pipeline,
yeah,
absolutely, this would have been a press release time.
I think if Apple put the 9.7-inch screen back in this, the slower processor back in this, and they bundled it with the pencil and the keyboard and sold it for $330, it'd be the best-selling computer in the world.
Well, Paul, sure. Here's what I think you should do. You should buy a bunch of these, put that bundle together, start an Amazon store, get to work. There's your startup idea. Yep.
No, but the bundle is $500, 160 plus, I'm not going to do the math, but you know, it's a lot of money. Yeah.
I refuse to do this basic
$600. It's $600.
Speaking of math, just two things to talk about. They announced a price for Apple TV Plus, $4.99 a month. We got to see the Blind Aquaman trailer.
The $4.99 a month thing isn't the most important part. It's $4.99 a month, but if you buy any Apple hardware at all, you get a year for free.
Yeah.
Which means a bunch of people are just going to get Apple TV for free, which is going to really juice their numbers. And so, you know, when there's like industry stories in 8 months of Apple TV versus Disney Plus versus Quibi versus Hulu versus Netflix versus HBO Max. Versus,
oh my God. AT&T TV Apple, Plus.
Yeah. Apple like basically is like they're on the cost of their hardware margins is going to be like up in the upper echelons of that conversation just by default because a ton of people are just going to have it for free.
Yeah, but like they've got, what, 10 shows? Like it.
Yeah.
It's weird that like a thing you get with an iPhone now is like a Jennifer Aniston show. Like, I mean, that's like the reality of it.
This works with music.
It doesn't work with music. You get 3 months of Apple Music as a subscription, sure. But like Apple doesn't make the music.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's why it works better to give this for free with music, because if someone becomes accustomed to Apple Music, like they're not going to stop, like, you know, there's not just one season of your favorite band and it's only on Apple Music, you know. But this is implying that, yeah, they have these shows that are somehow compelling enough that after a year, you'll want to start paying $5 a month to keep watching.
I want to actually press you on the there's not a one season of your band and then they're done, because okay. I've listened to Arcade Fire, okay?
What I meant to say is that when you say a music subscription service, you mean music. You don't mean Spotify's proprietary lineup of bands you can hear nowhere else.
Well, Spotify now has a proprietary lineup of podcasts you can hear nowhere else.
Well, I mean, don't listen to
it's
those.
All happening. Like, I encourage you to talk to Ashley. Like, that's her beat. She's on it. She's on the case. Like, it's that thing where you own the content, make it. Look, I think it's going to get them in the conversation. I think the trailer we saw of C, which is Jason Momoa in a world where everyone's blind hundreds of years in the future, looked so nonsensical and dumb that, like, I don't even believe that they made it. Right? But is it exciting that, like, you get some, like, free high production value show to watch? Like, sure. Is that going to make you buy another iPhone a year from now if you decide the ecosystem isn't worth it to you anymore? Like, I think the thing they're doing is they're just making the ecosystem more and more, like, valuable. So you have to give up more and more things to switch. That's a great way to spend money. Is Apple TV Plus going to become a profit center for this company over time? I have no idea. Because they have to they're going to have to – if the morning show is successful, they got to get Jennifer Aniston come back for season two. That's not an asset with, like, lots of value unless they make a bunch of seasons and turn into Friends. That's a lot of money. And then what? You're just not going to ever – that part to me is confusing in a way that the games, for example, are way less confusing to me. So the game service is also announced, Apple Arcade, $4.99 a month. You get a bunch of games that have no scammy free-to-play ads, no in-app purchases. They're just, like, beautiful little jewels of games, and then more of them will appear over time. And that, to me, is, like, incredible. Like, that's – it's the best thing that they've ever done with the App Store is, like, there's a place here where there's cool games that we've vetted, we've selected, they're high quality. There's no scams or bullshit in them. Just, like, enjoy. Like, absolutely worth $5 a month to me.
And they've got a bunch of, like, really interesting, like, indie games that a lot of people have actually been waiting for. I'm way more excited about Arcade than I am about Apple TV Plus. I just am. Because I'm looking for my next iPhone game, and now I don't have to, like, look. I'll just do that. I think it's going to create a lot of winners and losers. I still don't know how developers get paid in this system. That's going to be a very fascinating thing. Will the second year of Apple Arcade have as good a games? How much is Apple subsidizing these games? How much, what cut of that $5 a month the developers get? Is it going to be enough? Is it actually going to fund stuff? Like, the whole economics of games on the iPhone are very, very different and also very, very broken, right? They're broken. It's bad. The incentives are bad. So these incentives theoretically are good, but they might not be. They're just definitely better than what we have right now.
Well, I think it's at least definitely going to lead to better consumer experiences.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. There's going to be less – just anything that's less free-to-play games, and it's not, man, I hope this game is worth $15 to $30, which is sort of the two buckets you have now. Anything that, like, fills in that middle zone of, like, this is a high-quality, complete object, right? And I'm just going to, like, play it, and that'll be fun. I'm excited about it. I think it's the smartest thing they've done.
Yeah. It is ironic, though, because back when the App Store first launched, it was a revolution because people were tired of having to beg mobile carriers to include their games on the phone because that was the only way to make money. Now they can make money without having to beg carriers to let them in the door.
Huh. Yeah, that what really I don't know why it doesn't rub me the wrong way with the television stuff, but with video games, I just don't like the idea of an indie studio like that. I'm happy for all of the indie studios that won the lottery, and hopefully Apple's paying them a lot. If Apple's not paying them a lot, I hate this a lot. But the idea that now you're designing your company around hoping that Apple thinks that you match their vision for games. You know, there's a layer of indirection. Your customer becomes Apple, not people who play video games, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but if you want those people, you can just make an App Store game.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
Or you can make a, I don't know. I mean, like, you have to get a license from Nintendo to make a Switch game.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt me in any way. It doesn't excite me.
Yeah. I mean, that production company model is, like, also real. Like, if you want to make TV shows, your customer is Netflix and ABC and whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's been around for a while. I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, this is a thing that will make the iPhone ecosystem radically different than the Google ecosystem. at least until Google does the same thing, which it sounds
there's,
like
there's a rumor that Google's doing the same thing.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We're way over. I clapped, by the way. I couldn't help it. There it is. That's the time when I clap without helping it. Yeah, so excited about Paul's segment. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Paul Miller.
Uh-huh.
Every week.
Yeah.
With shocking consistency.
Uh-huh.
You do a thing. What's that thing called?
It's called Here's the Place Where We Do the Crimes, signed, Your Friend, a Teen.
Isn't this the same as, this is actually consistent to last week.
Yeah, it's the, that's the thing. It, the segment doesn't just have the same name. It's also part of a shared universe about teens who do crimes.
All right, I got it. I you know, it's funny how after several seasons, it's finally the shared universe has been revealed. Right.
It's all the threads coming together. So Google's doing this thing with AR Core. So, you know, like Apple makes AR Kit, Google makes AR Core. These are like technologies to scan your environment, find like little points of visual interest and do like tracking with it, right? So you can do AR experiences like Pokemon Go. Google is adding like a save button to AR Core so that you save, let's say you put your IKEA lamp in the middle of a park, right? And you're tracking it and then you click save, that can be a persistent cloud anchor that other people like maybe your friends or whatever, like, you know, Minecraft is doing something like this with using Microsoft has similar technology for like these cloud type anchors. So that there's going to be shared Minecraft experiences where I built a thing and my friends can see it. It not just they can see it, but they can see it in the same place where I built it in AR. All that to say, what if the teens put little messages up and say, here's the place where we do crimes. And then they share it with each other somehow. I don't know. It's not fully fleshed out. But I'm excited about cloud anchors because I just.
So I saw Microsoft demo a bunch of cloud anchor stuff to me a while back. I will say they were mostly interested in like architects, land surveyors, not so much into teams doing petty crimes. But I like that sort of like the Google riff on it is like, what if we open this up to young criminals of all stripes?
Google is opening this up to developers. There's like there's this Mark AR app where you do pretend graffiti. but see, obviously the thing is that you can't make this just like the world is one big MMO, right? Of AR stuff, right? Because it would just be dicks. Like everybody be drawing dicks all the time and you'd be inundated. So there have to be, so like that Minecraft Earth, you can make these things. This is the Microsoft version of this technology. You can make things and share them with your friends. But I don't think, I'm hoping someday there is some sort of, we solve the dick problem and we somehow can have a shared world, because I do want some way of just discovering weird stuff in the world that someone has built, you know, like maybe they made a sculpture out of IKEA furniture, you know, in AR, and they've saved it into like a park I visit, and I'm at the park. And so I just see, hey, there's something in this park. Do you want to look at it? And I say yes. And then I can see it through my phone. I think that's pretty cool. Obviously when we get AR glasses, that's going to be even, that seems like what the world will be like someday if we could solve the dick problem.
Yeah.
Step one, fix YouTube comments. Step two, anybody can put any virtual object anywhere and we all see it.
It's
and,
easy.
You know, like, yeah.
I was going to say the, can you imagine the ecosystem lock-in problem of like the world is entirely different if you have an Apple phone?
Oh yeah.
Versus an Android phone. And, like, you see incompatible realities.
No, that's exactly what's going to happen.
That's 100% what's going to happen. All right, Dieter, walk us through these Pixel 4 leaks. Let's end, like, the iPhone's here. You know, we're going to do reviews. Like, tech season has started. But they're obviously, and even as we talk about the camera, as much as we talked about the camera, they're up against not only, like, the Pixel 3 and the Note 10 or whatever, but sort of, like, promise of the Pixel 4, right?
Because yeah.
We expect that to lead the way for Android for the next minute.
There are just so many leaks. It's been reviewed on camera. We have seen the orange color. We've seen a walkthrough of how the face unlock works. There's claims that it's going to have 8x zoom and improved night sight. It's just there's even like camera samples, and like these are like are rough and ready enough where like we can't like really make judgments off this stuff, but like it's every day. Mm-hmm. It's every day, y'all. There is 1 to 3 new Pixel 4 leaks, and I don't know. You want me to walk through? It's like it's the whole phone is out there. The whole thing. Like, you know?
Is Google bad at securing things, or is Google thirsty for coverage?
I think it is 90% Google's bad at securing things, and 10% they're thirsty, and they're like, they're not super sad that all these leaks are happening right around the time the iPhone got announced.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interest in the Pixel 4. I do think also Google is just notoriously leaky.
Yeah.
Right? They're like,
but like these leaks are, maybe it was the same last year. I mean, the things like literally like got stolen from a truck, fell off a truck last year. Actually, oh, look at that. One of the YouTube videos got taken down. Hmm. Look at that.
It's funny because, you know, Google owns that platform.
Yeah, look at that.
It's like, that's just a call they can make at any time.
There's apparently a new voice recording app, which is exciting. I like the way the orange one looks. The way that they're handling the finish with the glass and the bezels and all that stuff across the different colors seems really interesting. But the only thing that really matters is what are they going to do in the software that we haven't seen yet? We've already seen the Face ID. We've also seen the theming. The theming actually looks kind of interesting because it looks like it's not as like do whatever you want and get kids who just discovered Tron and manga building themes. You actually get like some like nice subtle, you know, themes that feel like they fit with the phone. But like, what else is there? Like, what is the quality of the photos? What are they actually doing in the photos?
Battery life.
How's the battery life? Yeah, the battery life, especially in the small one, will matter. Yeah. What else is there to, what other mysteries are there left for the Pixel 4? There just aren't.
Yeah. I mean, does the Soli gesture stuff actually work?
Well, yeah, that's true.
Right. Like, I think we know what the phone is. We have no idea whether it's any good. It's funny. They should just release it now and let us review it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They shouldn't have an announcement event. They should just, like, hand it out to reviewers and be done.
Well, if they get every carrier, which is, I think, what we're expecting this time around, they need to, like, build some hype. But it's interesting that, you know, it's the iPhone's going to hit. People are going to get them. I personally am wondering if there are, in this world, iOS to Android switchers, or people are just happy in that ecosystem, particularly because of iMessage lock-in. But they're going to go up against, like, Apple's putting out a phone into a world where the Pixel 4 all but exists.
Yeah.
Right? You're already measuring it against this phone that you know is coming that has set the tone for cameras for so long. I think that's super interesting, but we have to actually get it and see it. I will say, I'll put this out there. I understand that it's been technically surpassed. There has never been a phone camera as good as the Pixel 2. And what I mean by that is the Pixel 2 was like a step change for cameras. It was so much better than everything in its class, than everything that had come before it. And we've just been iterating on that pattern. I thought the Pixel 3 was a little disappointing in that regard. Like, it went kind of sideways. It didn't go forward. I hope the Pixel 4 can like push it again. I'm like looking for, and they're adding lenses and stuff to the back. We'll see. But that's what I'm looking for from the Pixel 4. Okay. I think that is all of the phone news from this week.
That's enough.
Have we accomplished it all?
Did you know Motorola like has a phone coming?
Oh my
like,
god!
Like, nobody knows
Motorola still exists. All right, some of the phones are going to start folding soon. We got to get these. You got to like milk it from the candy bars as long as we can, and then they're going to add G's next year. 15 cameras, 34 G's folds
good.
In half.
Good.
Here you go.
Finally,
only runs on Apple's MVNO. All right, that's it. That's the Vergecast for this week. I know a long one. Thank you for sticking with us. It is tech season. It's here. Apple had its stuff. There's going to be a Surface event. They promised not only hardware, but experiences. You will have experiences with Surface devices. That's out in the world. Presumably, Google will do something for a Pixel. They'll just do low flybys of New York City, dropping them out of a plane so everyone can just have them.
Amazon just announced they're doing a thing on the 25th.
Amazon has an event. We're in it. It's here. The most exciting part of the year if you're into gadgets. It's hardware season, so get ready for a lot of very long Vergecasts. They're coming at you. We'll see you next week. Rock and roll.
Paul.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W, and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.